This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. It's time for Place to Be Nation's Year in Pop. Each episode, we go back in time to a year in the past and take a trip down memory lane and see what was going on in the worlds of news, sports, and pop culture with your hosts, Andy Atherton and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the Year in Pop here on the PTBN Pop Feed. I am your co-host, Andy Atherton, and thank you for joining us tonight. We are in the 80s, making our way through the early parts of the decade. Tremendous year tonight. I am very psyched. You know, one of the things, pull back the curtain a little bit of doing the research for these, kind of jolt your memory, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh, you know, it's like, got very excited writing the notes. And speaking of excited, though, let me get the rest of the crew in here. Let me introduce my co-host first. He is the co-host of the main event over on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, as well as the Mothership Place to Be Podcast. He's one of the Jenny and Gems. And currently, you hear him on the Pop Feed right now, doing a great series of Pop Goes the Classics, the Podfather, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you tonight, my friend?
Mr. Atherton, I almost forgot what you look like.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess.
Except for the one picture with your kind of Zorro Three Musketeers beard you got going on there. So,
that lost the battle. It got shaved off. My pathetic excuse for a quarantine beard went away like a week ago.
Oh, my quarantine beard. I'm looking like fucking. Oh yeah, I'm looking like Billy Gibbons right now. anyway, good to talk to you, sir. I feel like it's been forever since we did 1981. I think it's been a month and a half, but with every year that we do in this decade, the shit just gets better and better. Mm-hmm. But why don't we bring in the rest of our crew? This gentleman, one show you're starting for, you're forgetting, Andy, and you need to add to it when you do the wonderful introduction you do for me, and I appreciate it. But I am also the co-host of the NWA Saturday Special. And this week, we're switching things up. We're calling an audible after what happened tonight on the YouTube channel. But he is, of course, with us here, and he is also my co-host on the NWA Saturday Special, the Doctor, Dr. G, Giorgio Bellino, who's trying his best, if anybody watched the NWA clip tonight, to grow his beard like Billy Corgan. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah. He looks a little homeless, don't you think?
I definitely look homeless. There's no doubt about that.
You're the man in sweatpants. All right. So anyway, the Doctor's with us. And Andy, why don't you, of course, conclude our quartet?
All right. Well, this man needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. He is crossfeeds. He's everywhere. You can find him. You know, he pops up on the Jennifer position. He's over on the North-South connection over on the Extreme Three-Way Dance. Oh, also, he is very present on the Place of Nation Wrestling Feed, quite often on the Place to Be podcast. And he often appears on some of my shows, like recently on Laughing Theater. We watched Animal House. Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato. Johnny, how are you tonight?
Wonderful. The boys are back in town. And yes, thanks for the introduction. I'm officially known as a three-holer.
You need to be in sweatpants.
Who says he's not? all right, great. So, guys... 1982. This is our 11th episode, so we're officially, you know, past our first decade, I guess you want to say. Mm-hmm. So what strikes out about this year before we like really start talking into it? Anything pop out at you? Transitions, you know, movies, music, TV, anything that you are excited to go over tonight?
Well, for me, 1982 was a huge year for sci-fi and horror movies. I'm looking forward to talking about that. The summer of 82 was a crazy year for for epic sci-fi mm-hmm. and horror movies.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Sadly, though, we get to talk about another sports strike, and that always blows. But yeah, those are two of my big things. Doctor, what are you thinking about for 1982?
Well, you know, I 82 was one of those years I remember more for the TV aspect. I guess those, you know, because now things, you know, as we were going through the years, now you're starting to remember a lot of the shows that you watch, you know, because I feel like sometimes I get confused because so many of the shows we watch from the 70s, we watched in syndication, you know, but to us, it was like watching them the first time around. So I always look forward to talking about the, you know, the different shows. Talking about David Letterman, that I'm looking forward to talking about in 1982. And, yep, you know, another sports strike, like you said. Seems like we talk about those, every 5 to 10 years. We're always going through something like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So I'm excited. You know, like you said, now that we're getting into the 80s now, you know, this stuff comes a little bit more into focus for us, the stuff that I remember.
Mm. Johnny, what about you?
Oh, definitely some iconic blockbuster movies and kind of a shift in the music scene from album rock to more top 40 and like some monster pop hits and stars that are going to start to take the shape and start taking over the 80s music wise.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. When we get to the music segment, because I'm going to mention a decent amount of albums in the B block that really were known for one song. And that was fine for these bands. You know what I mean? Like when I mention some of these albums, you're going to wonder what the fuck the other seven songs on the, or whatever songs on the album were, because nobody really remembers. But yeah, no, I agree with Johnny on that too, Andy. Music. Now that we're firmly entrenched, this will be the first full year of MTV. So that's a big deal. And that's where I think, Johnny, you hit the nail on the head about singles dominating over albums now at this point. The 70s was a big album decade. The 80s becomes a big singles decade. And I think a lot of that has to do with things like the jukebox, roller rinks, skating rinks, that kind of thing. So let's hop in. Let's dive in.
All right. So as we start off, let's just kind of gloss over the stats really quick. So average cost of new house went up $4,000 from 1981 to $82,200. The average income stayed steady at $21,050. Your average rent went up $5, $320 a month. Average cost of a new car was around a little under $8,000. Gallon of gas dropped about 35 cents from $1.25 to 91 cents. The inflation rate went down to 6.16%. And a 19-inch Sony television would run you about $500. Fuck God.
19 inches was a big fucking deal in 1982. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah, $500. Wow. And yeah, I don't know how big they got back then. Well, what do you think the biggest TV was at that time? Like 40 inches, maybe?
And that's even pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, we talked about this on past episodes about, like, and we all had them, you know, the big TVs that were on the, you know, like the, almost, I don't know what the official name was, but they were like cabinet TVs almost. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that were on the ground, like the big ones. I mean, the screen was maybe 30 inches, maybe.
But it was the apparatus that took up all the room.
The apparatus, the speakers, and my mother loved, you know, the big top with the, she put a vase on it, you know, with the cable box and all that shit. So
with the plastic on the furniture and everything.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Very Italian.
That was my grandmother's house, not my mom's house. It was my grandmother's house.
Yeah. Popular toys at the time were the Barbie bubble bath for the little girls, Dial-A-Story talking books, Disney Matchums, Fisher-Price houseboats. Fisher-Price was huge. They had a recorder that you could buy, a tape recorder, fuel-powered stunt flyers. Those were becoming big. He-Man action figures. I was a big He-Man fan back then.
Ooh,
I used
me
to
too.
Love the show. Matchbox cars, of course. Tyco Super Duper Double Looper Dirt Bike Race Set. My Huggable Race Doll. Now, new video game systems were coming along that a lot of them didn't stay very long, though. The Odyssey 2 video game system came out. And, you know, we started getting little tabletop arcade games, basically like very, like mostly just blips, but, you know, they look like a real one. We have Pac-Man and Frogger for the tabletop versions. Nowadays, they have stuff called My Arcade, which is really close to what they were, and for like $40. I have a whole collection of them sitting on the wall, so they're very cool. Mm-hmm. So we'll dive into this a little more later on in the TV spot, but some of the pop culture stories of 1982. The first episode of Late Night with David Letterman debuted on NBC during February of that year. It aired after Johnny Carson's Tonight Show and was directed by Hal Gurney. The show's first guests were Bill Murray and Don Herbert. It soon gained a reputation for its innovative offbeat humor and quirkiness. It aired for over a decade with Letterman as the host until he moved on to CBS to host The Late Show in 1993, and has continued being kind of a stepping stone. Not saying that as it looks down, but you know, that's where Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers is there now, where these are the guys that are great, and they're, you know, they're right almost there for like that 11:30 shot, but you know, we'll put them at 12:30. So what do you guys think? I mean, we're going to talk about a big event that happens on the Late Show later on in the TV section. But what are your overall general thoughts on Letterman, Johnny?
I was familiar with him because he had started in the morning, mm-hmm. So I was familiar, and yeah, I liked his different, his quirky humor. It was a little more. You know, for the youthful audience, as you know, Johnny Carson was for the old school folks, and it was a little something different. You know, something for the younger crowd.
Yeah, he was a departure, so to speak. Doctor, what about you in terms of Letterman?
I agree with Johnny on that. You know, one thing about Letterman, Johnny Carson, you thought of like, you know, your grandparents watching, and you know, and. This he seemed to relate more to the younger crowd. I mean, obviously, you know, I didn't really watch it that much until like, you know, like maybe through the summertime or whatever, you know, when you got like the reruns of it or whatever, because obviously during the week having to get up early or whatever. But I remember him being different and funny, and my dad enjoyed him. Watching Letterman as well, because like I said, I always thought of it as like my Johnny Carson as being like my grandparents' show that they used to watch.
Yeah. Scott, what about you?
Oh, Dave was huge. And I mean, I liked and I watched Johnny Carson. I think my mom was the bigger Johnny fan than my dad. My dad liked watching, you know, he would watch baseball when he got home. Although at the time, you know, my mom was the one that worked nights at this time of my life, and my dad was home. My mom worked nights at Sears, and my dad was the one at home. So, depending on the time of the year, whether he was watching the Rangers or you know, the Yankees or whatever, depending on the time of the year. But he was not a late night guy. He would stay up, but he wouldn't watch the shows. I like Dave because Dave was funny. I found Dave less funny once he hit CBS because he had to be a little more mainstream. But Dave in this slot was awesome. And we'll talk about the one episode I remember, and I wasn't even a fan of that genre yet in 1982, but I do vaguely remember it. But Dave definitely kind of woke things up. It was kind of like Friday Night Videos, and TV was evolving for youth. And we talked about MTV in the last episode, and I think Dave was the same way. He was kind of giving broadcast television something for the teenage masses and the early 20s viewers. You know, that Johnny was locked in at 11:30, and people from like the age of 38 to, you know, 108 were watching Johnny. He wasn't going anywhere. So, no, Dave was definitely a big deal. CBS pretty much tanked the overnight. ABC had Nightline, but that was only on at 11:35. So Nightline used to get its ass kicked by Johnny. So NBC firmly won late night for the entire decade, pretty much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, we'll get back to Dave and a special event that happens later that year. Mm-hmm. So some other things that happened in the world of pop culture in 1982. The first issue of USA Today is published. You guys know, take a guess. How long did USA Today operate at a loss? How long till they turned a profit after they started? You guys have a guess?
10 years? 10 years?
Not quite.
Maybe 7 years, maybe like 89.
Yeah, a little less time. Doctor, you got a guess?
I'm going to say about 1988.
I would all go guesses, but 4 years. They operated at a loss, which is pretty amazing that, you know, today, anything that operates at a loss for 4 months goes under. And it was, USA Today was different. I still, to this day, sometimes I'll pick one up just to check it out. The crossword puzzle is much easier than the New York Times one, I'll tell you that much.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, the USA Today sports section was fucking awesome. So I love the sports section, the red section.
Mm-hmm. The red, yeah, that was the one thing.
Peter, you want the red section? Yes, Ma, I'll take the red section.
Yeah, the green section, yeah.
Because at the time in the early 80s, we were still locked in on our local papers. I mean, you guys obviously read the Time, you know, the Post, Daily News, Newsday. I read, you know, my family was the New Haven Register. At the time, there was another paper called the Journal Courier. The Hartford Current. Yeah. So the Bridgeport Post, those were the four major newspapers in my neck of the woods. So a national newspaper, it was kind of the same thing with national cable TV, like CNN at the time was still evolving. But we, the four of us, I mean, and we talked about this before, you guys watch Channel 2, Channel 4, yeah. Channel 7, Channel 5, PIX 11, you know, OR. I watched, you know, my local ones, Channel 3, FSB, Channel 8, you know. So a national presence on anything was still kind of foreign to all of us. So I can that Andy hits the nail on the head about why it took so long for USA Today to kind of gather an audience. And when we get to 1989, 90 down the line, sports tried to do the same thing with another newspaper that I still remember so fondly and made me smile when I used to collect it every day.
I have the last issue still.
I have I had the first 40. I kept all of them. My mom was pissed. I love that paper, but we'll talk about that when we get to, I think 89 is when it debuted. So we'll talk about that down the line. But I think, yeah, a national presence, I think still was foreign to a lot of us, particularly in the Northeast, because we had such awesome local TV and local newspapers that it didn't really hit us for a while. So I could see that makes total sense that they were at a loss for at least a few years, mm-hmm. You know?
Also down in Orlando, Florida, Epcot is opened by at the Walt Disney World Resort is the second gate. So at that, what do you guys, Epcot fans? I mean, it's not, it's evolving now. It's a lot different. But it became it was Walt always wanted it to be a city. But, you know, Walt had passed about 16 years earlier, so he wasn't alive to see it. So it became a cross between what Walt loved was a World's Fair, and Walt was a huge technology guy. So it was edutainment / World's Fair. So you guys, George, you said you love Epcot. Drinking around the world, you guys ever do that?
I've only been to Epcot once, and I was 12.
Oh, okay.
So I need to go back now that I'm old enough.
I haven't been since 1995 or 96, somewhere around there. So yeah, I didn't do the drink around the world, which I'd like to do that now.
Yeah, I did.
Although we can't.
Yeah, right now, no, you can't do anything right now. Graceland, the home of Elvis Presley, is open to the public for the first time. The first CD player is sold in Japan. That sounds really early than I ever had thought CD players were coming out. The Weather Channel launches and aired on cable television for the first time. A Soviet spaceship, the Venera 13, lands on Venus, sends back color photographs. Here's an interesting tidbit. Ciabatta bread is invented by a baker in Verona, Italy. You wouldn't think a kind of bread is invented in invented in the 80s.
Tony Ciabatta.
the car brand Toyota Camry is introduced, which is basically probably the most well-sold car today. Time, their man of the year that year, is the computer. Speaking of computers, the first computer virus, the Elk Cloner, was written by a 15-year-old, and it infects Apple II computers via the floppy disk. And something that I owned, well, I actually owned the 128, but the Commodore 64 8-bit home computer is launched by Commodore International Las Vegas. It becomes an all-time best-selling single personal computer model. Any of you guys have Commodores besides me?
Yes, I did. I was the 128 as well.
Yeah, I always played in 64 mode because all the games were 64. Did you ever use word processing?
My buddy had a Commodore 64. I didn't have a Commodore. My buddy had a Commodore 64. Yeah. That was the tan one. Then there was the VIC-20, which was the lighter tan one.
Mm-hmm. I actually bought last year a Commodore Mini. You know, those things where they take, like, you know, it looks like the Commodore, but it's like, you know, can fit in your hand. And you plug it into your TV and you play the games. And I started playing games and I'm like, ugh. These are not like I remember.
I know.
I have the Atari, the mini yeah. Atari that hooked to the TV, and I was like, oh my God, we actually thought this was great.
I know, we're so spoiled nowadays. And speaking of video games, this was a great year. This was a banner year in arcade games. Zaxxon came out that year. Do you guys remember
that game?
Zaxxon, that 3D yes. kind of graphics kind of thing going on.
Yep.
The sequel to Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man. Came out, which we've talked about before in the show, how how I always like Miss Pac-Man better. Dig Dug, another fun game, came out.
Yep.
Where you kind of dig around and you got chased by these little creatures and you got to try to drop rocks on them and shit. A game that I actually also really loved, and I would volunteer to go with my dad to get, you know, he went to this one place to get a newspaper, or some newspaper, I forget what it was, maybe it was like something to do with horse racing, but they had a Donkey Kong Jr. machine there. And I was like, Dad, I'll come. You're going to get the paper, because I love Donkey Kong Jr. You guys ever play that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely played Donkey Kong
Jr. It was quite a different Jungle Hunt, which was cool. That was the one where you swing on vines, and then you would dive into the water with alligators, and then you would jump over boulders or whatever, get to these headhunters, I guess, and jump over their boiling. Mm-hmm. Pole Position, one of the early great racing games. Super Pac-Man came out. That year, Mr. Do, which was kind of like a Dig Dug clone. Qbert, another legendary.
Qbert.
Qbert, yep. Who taught you how to swear.
Yes.
Time Pilot, which was a lot of fun, where you got to, you know, the game would get, each level was a different time period, like between like World War this or you know, this time. So you got to fly a lot of different things. Tron came out that year.
Yes, love Tron.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun game. Joust. Where you were on top of, I guess, flying ostriches.
Yeah.
Robotron 2084, which, you know, we're only 64 years away from that. And another great game, Burger Time.
Burger Time.
I like Burger Time. I had that for my television.
Mm-hmm. I have a mini version of Burger Time, and I did have that on television. And on speaking of Intellivision, on the consoles that year, Atari 2600, you had Pac-Man, which was okay. Yar's Revenge, which was a fun game. I didn't really know the point of it, but it was fun. E.T. the Extraterrestrial game, which caused the video games kind of tanked like a while because they mass produced. I don't know if you guys ever heard of the whole thing about E.T. the Atari version, where they mass produced it and it bombed. That there's like landfills filled with Atari cartridges.
No, there's a documentary on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's in New Mexico.
Yeah.
It buried, and it was a whole urban thing, and they had like a whole, like this, like 2,000 or 3,000 people traveled to this. It's almost like Area 51 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they dug up and they found like 2,000 fucking ET cartridges in the box. So I can't remember the name of it, but check it out. The document, it's not a long document. It's like an hour.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. I can't remember the name of it, but it's pretty funny, but the game is fucking horrendous. Yeah. It's absolutely terrible.
That's terrible.
The documentary is excellent. It's highly recommended.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. Yep.
And then, also coming out, Activision, which was, a different developer. They crossed over, eventually saw them on television as well. They started off as primarily for Atari, but, you know, games like River Raid, Barnstorming, Chopper Command. Then we had Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back game came out. And then on the ColecoVision, you had Ladybug, Mousetrap, Venture with Winky. Venture was this game where you're like this little smiley face with a bow and arrow and you had to go to different rooms and fight different creatures. Kind of like trying to hit on the D&D popularity at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the PC, you had the first Flight Simulator came out. And another fun game, Choplifter, which was good because you got to, you know, you were a pretty cool, you know, 8-bit helicopter where you had to fire the guns and you had to do rescue missions. So, you know, good stuff. Now, moving on to celebrities, we had some notable deaths in 1982. We had Victor Buono, I think his name was. He died, he was rather young, but he was best known for playing King Tut on the Batman TV show. The great comedian Paul Lynde passed away.
Oh.
Well, don't you know? All by yourself.
Tremendous center square. Mm-hmm. Tremendous center square.
All right. Lee Strasberg, the famous actor who had the actors acting school after.
Simon Roth.
Mm-hmm. Novelist Name Philip Simon K. Roth. Dick. Now, another a tragedy we lost. John Belushi.
We need to talk about this for a minute. Mm-hmm. This was probably the first gut punch death since John Lennon. This guy was on top of the world. He was arguably the funniest guy. I mean, he was in that level with Richard Pryor and George Carlin as like legitimately the funniest guys in the world.
Mm-hmm.
His SNL sketches were epic. Obviously, Bluto and Animal House speaks for itself, and you guys doing Laughing Theater was just fantastic. And I remember my mother telling me this, and I literally lost my mind. Like I didn't know what to do. I legitimately didn't know what to do. It was a hard one. I know they accused that woman of feeding him the speedball. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, he wasn't murdered or anything. He enjoyed his recreations, and we would of course have to suffer with this again 15 years later with Chris Farley. I mean, he pretty much the exact same thing. I mean, it's the exact same death because he had the exact same life.
Yeah.
Those are his idols. Yeah. So, well, he lived that way and he died that way. But I remember being totally gut punched, Johnny, when I found out about John Belushi, because it was huge. I remember it was like on the news all day the next day, and it was crazy.
Yeah, for somebody on top of the Hollywood world there, with Animal House and Blues Brothers back to back, and just an icon on Saturday Night Live, just to be taken out so young, and all because of excess drug use, is a terrible tragedy.
What do you think of John Belushi, Doctor?
I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, I got to know a lot more about him after the fact, but I mean, we were only what, 8 or 9 at that time, so I'm surprised you remember it so much like that. I remember him more as I got older and watched reruns of Saturday Night Live and learned about him, but at the time, I probably didn't really pay attention to it as much, I guess, if you want to say it, to be truthful.
Yeah, I remember the news report. I wasn't really familiar. I mean, we had seen probably like clips of the Blues Brothers as kids or the Killer Bees or whatever, or from Saturday Night Live. But yeah, it became more like, you don't understand it or appreciate Belushi until you're older. Until you have that somebody shows you. Like, sit down. You need to watch the Blues Brothers. You need to watch Animal House. These are going to change you, your views of comedy. And, unfortunately at the Chateau Marmont, hanging out, I believe it was Robin Williams he was hanging out with the night before as well. And I don't know if we talked about this before, but, Aykroyd was back in New York, and he was writing Ghostbusters at the time. And I believe he was writing Peter Venkman for Belushi, which would have been... Would have been, he would have
different.
Done, yeah, different. He would have done a great job. It would have been not as understated as Bill Murray, but it would have been fun.
It would have been different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, passing away is Hugh Beaumont, best known as Ward from the Leave It to Beaver. Now, here was something that was in the news quite a bit. Vic Morrow. Now, a lot of people may not be familiar with that name, but he's actually Jennifer Jason Leigh's father. He died, and unfortunately, these two child actors, they died in an onset accident for the Twilight Zone movie. Mm-hmm. They were shooting a scene with a helicopter, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but unfortunately, the blade of the helicopter struck all of them and killed them all instantly. Ugh. And it was actually a big trial, too, because John Landis was, they tried to hold him accountable as the director. He got he got a, acquitted or he got off or whatever, however you want to term it.
They threw it out. It was stupid.
It was an unfortunate accident. I mean, that's basically what happens.
If you don't know Vic Morrow otherwise, he's the asshole father who smacked his kid around managing the Yankees.
Bad News Bears.
Yeah. And the Bad News Bears. Those fucking scumbag Yankees, the Little League team.
Hey, Turner.
Yeah. So he's the asshole manager who fucking smacks his kid in the mouth who's pitching because he gives up the home run. So,
yeah.
In case you don't know, if you didn't see the Twilight Zone, you're not sure who he is. That's the mm-hmm. actor.
So. We also lost the legendary Henry Fonda, who we'll talk about him later in the movie section because, you know, he does get some accolades posthumously.
Yes.
Also, Joe E. Ross, who played Gunther Tootie on Car 54, which I watched on Nick at Night religiously back when I was younger. Posthumously talking about Ingrid Bergman. She also wins an award later in the year. Mm-hmm. Another tragedy, though. Grace Kelly, the Princess of Monaco, dies in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Actor Fernando Lamas. Young actress Dominique Dunn is murdered as the writer Dominique Dunn's daughter. She was also in the Poltergeist movie. She played the mm-hmm. oldest daughter. Marty Feldman, the very funny comedian featured in many Mel Brooks movies. Jack Webb, who was Sergeant Joe Friday on the original Dragnet. And Will Lee, better known as Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street. Now, that was very sad. I remember that. I mean, that was because
I definitely remember that because it was very controversial at the time because usually they would just replace the actor. Mm-hmm. Replace the actor and put a new Mr. Hooper or Mr. Looper, as Big Bird called him. Mm-hmm. But instead, they wanted to teach kids about death. So they told Big Bird that Mr. Hooper died. And I remember my mom mortified by this. But my dad was like, I remember that my parents having this conversation in the living room. They're like, no, the kids need to know. People die. It's what happens. You know, you don't fake it. You don't. Because they're going to think that, you know, you could replace, relatives with new people. You know what I mean? So I thought it was pretty ballsy by Sesame Street to do that at the time. And good for them. I thought it was smart. Using Big Bird as the example, the symbol of kids being told that someone they care about, older. You know, I wouldn't really experience death for another 10 years. Because at the time in 82, I still had the three of my four grandparents that were alive when I was born. So I didn't have to really experience personal death for another 10 years, but I thought it was smart. Mm-hmm. I thought it was smart to do that. Instead of just replacing and put another actor in there, they taught kids that what death is. So it was a big deal at the time, I remember.
Yeah. So moving on to the other side of the coin now, notable births, some famous people that came into the world in 82, Anne Hathaway, Kirsten Dunst, Jessica Biel, Seth Rogen, Alice Eve, Anna Paquin, Eddie Redmayne, Alison Brie, Alicia Cuthbert. Over in England, you know, a big event happened was the birth of Charles and Diana's first child, Prince William, or better known as Wills, the future king, who's got to, you know, wait for his grandmother and his father to, the Duchess of, Ellen's going to kill me. I can't remember what the Duchess is of, Kate Middleton is Duchess of Cambridge, I think, or I don't know. But, you know, she's the future. Future queen. In the world of music, we Nicki Minaj, Lil Wayne, Kelly Clarkson, Adam Lambert, Leanne Rimes. In sports, Dwayne Wade, Big Ben, Roethlisberger, Danica Patrick, Tony Parker, Andy Roddick, Jason Witten, one of your Cowboys there, Dana Taurasi, mm-hmm. Tara Lipinski, our Rangers, Henrik Lundqvist came in. And in the world of wrestling, here we go, Kota Ibushi, Sexy Star, Jake Hager, Maria Kanellis, Ted DiBiase Jr., Natalya, Punishment Martinez, a.k.a. Damian Priest, Chris Sabin, Eli Drake, and Primo and Epico both were born in that year. And that's going to conclude our pop culture section. So on to sports, Mr. Criscola, take it away.
Thank you, sir. We will go through this briskly. We'll start in baseball. Hall of Fame put in two fucking studs, Frank Robinson, won a home run title in both leagues with the Reds and then with the Orioles. And of course the at the time and still is, depending on your point of view, home run king, Mr. Henry Aaron, 755 legitimate home runs. Oh, did I say that out loud? Sorry. Happy Chandler and Travis Jackson went in the Veterans Committee. In the 1982 season, we went back to normal after the strike in 81 fucked shit up. In 82, things are back to normal. The Brewers won the AL East. The Angels won the West. The Cardinals won the East. And Joe Torre's Braves won the NL West in 82. Robin Yount was your MVP, a tremendous player. Dale Murphy won the NL MVP. Your Cy Young Award winners, Pete Vukovich, complete with his awesome mustache, won the AL Cy Young. And Steve Carlton, miserable prick, won the NL Cy Young. Oh, did I say that out loud? Sorry. Your AL Rookie of the Year is Cal Ripken Jr. of the Orioles, and we'll talk about him in a minute. Steve Altosaks was NL Rookie of the Year, a future Yankee. And the top draft pick, Mike Moore, was the number one overall pick of the Seattle Mariners. Your 1982 World Series got everybody shit-faced because it was the they called it the Suds Series. Bud versus Miller in the World Series, St. Louis Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers. Good series. That Brewer team, of course, Harvey's Wallbangers, a bunch of just mashers on that team. Yount, Ben Ogilvie, Gorman Thomas, Cecil Cooper, and arguably one of my favorite players of all time, Paul Molitor, who was just a fucking pure contact hitter. That guy, you never could strike that guy out. He was just a pure hitter. Loved him. Great player. I have his jersey. And of course, the Cardinals had Mr. D'Amato's and my future first baseman, and Keith Hernandez. And the Cardinals won Game 7 at home to win the World Championship. Some notes. Speaking of May 6th of that year, Gaylord Perry, complete with Vaseline and Vagisil, became the 15th pitcher to win 300 games, beat the Yankees 7-3 at the Kingdome. On May 30th, Cal Ripken started at third base against the Blue Jays, and it would be game one of the 2,632 straight games that he would play. On October 3rd, the Giants eliminated the defending world champion Dodgers from contention. The Braves, as I mentioned, won the NL West. One of the few times a defending champion was eliminated on the last day of the regular season. And for the first time since 1959, nobody threw a no-hitter in 1982. Interesting. In college basketball, one of the greatest national championship games of all time. They talk about it on this documentary on ESPN called The Last Dance. North Carolina defeated Georgetown 63-62 on a Michael Jordan jump shot and an errant pass thrown by Freddie Brown. That Carolina team was awesome. Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Sam Perkins, Jimmy Black, Matt Doherty. And, of course, Patrick Ewing was a freshman on Georgetown and was a fucking stud. And, of course, that was at the Superdome in New Orleans. The 1982 NBA draft, the number one pick was Mr. Worthy from Gastonia, drafted by the Lakers. Dominique Wilkins went third to Georgia, to the Atlanta Hawks. Actually, he went to the Jazz, and then he was traded to the Hawks. The number six pick from Minnesota, a guy that Mr. D'Amato was a big fan of, Trent Tucker, big shot Trent, the sixth pick. And with the 13th pick, the Nets took Sleepy Floyd from my beloved Georgetown. The NBA Hall of Fame class that year, Alva Odoor, Hal Greer, Slater Martin, Frank Ramsey, and another one of Mr. D'Amato's favorites. And here comes Willis, the great Knicks center, Willis Reed. You know what I always liked about Willis Reed, D'Amato, he was one of the first guys I ever watched, like, whose chain used to dangle when he played. Like, nobody else wore jewelry. Even Clyde, Walt Frazier didn't wear jewelry when he played. But for some reason, I always remember highlights of Willis Reed with a big rope around his neck when he played. I don't know why I thought of that, but I always thought that was pretty
cool. Yeah. So. Pimpin', they've been replaying the 70 Game 7 a lot. And people forget, he did play a lot. He only scored, he hit those first two shots, like, in the first minute.
That was it.
The game, yeah. And he pretty much went 2-for-9. But it was just his presence, keeping Wilt in check. And he overshadowed because Clyde Frazier had one of the greatest games of all time.
He did. 36 points, yeah. 19 assists for Clyde. I love Walt Frazier. Anyway, in 82 in the final.
Those scumbag Lakers.
speaking of the fucking scumbag Lakers, they won the world title in 1982. They beat the Sixers.
What else is new?
Yeah. That's right. It was rigged anyway. So shitty refereeing. According to Sixers fans and Laker haters. The regular season ran until mid-April for the first time. The All-Star game that year was played at the shiny new Brendan Byrne Arena. When would we ever say that the Brendan Byrne Arena was nice? And speaking of, it was also the Nets moved from D'Amato's backyard at the Felt Forum. Not the Felt Forum,
the mausoleum,
and started as the New Jersey Nets. Let's see. Magic won his second NBA Finals MVP award. The Lakers began a string of 9 straight years as the number one seed in the West. The breakaway rim became standard equipment in the NBA, thanks to Chocolate Thunder, Daryl Dawkins. The 3-to-make-2 free throw rule, along with 2-to-make-1, were both eliminated, which was kind of a stupid rule anyway. So there's your NBA stuff. In the NFL, in the draft, the number one overall pick, talk about forgettable, the New England Patriots selected Kenneth Sims. He was a defensive end from Texas. Some other memorable picks, Jim McMahon, who led BYU to a Holiday Bowl win a couple years earlier, was drafted 5th by the Bears. Mike Munchak, who would be a future coach, drafted by the Oilers. Marcus Allen, who had won the Heisman the year before, was taken 10th by the Raiders. Andre Tippett, my favorite Patriot of all time, went 41st to the Patriots. Gentlemen, another piece of your world title puzzle in a few years was drafted when little Joe Morris from Syracuse was taken 45th by the New York Football Giants. Were you a Joe Morris guy, Dr. G?
Oh yeah, I love Joe Morris. I love those teams in the 80s. It's just great memories. But yeah, no, he's a scrappy little guy. You know, I mean, he wasn't the best in the league, but he did his job. You know, he was part of that Giants offense that controlled the clock and have the defense beat the shit out of you and walk away with a win.
Just wore you down.
Yep, wore you down. Was Mo Carthon on the team in 82? I don't know. Was he there by Johnny? Do you remember? Was he there by 82? Mo Carthon or no?
I think of mid 80s.
Yeah, I don't think he was there.
Rob Carpenter was probably there. I remember. Yeah. Anyway, Joe Morris went 45th from Syracuse to the G-Men. Mark Super Duper went to Miami with the 52nd pick, and one of the greatest kickers of all time, Morton Anderson, went 86th to the Saints from Michigan State. Your NFL Hall of Fame class, pretty good one. Doug Atkins, Sam Huff, another former Giant, George Musso, and Merlin Olsen, Father Murphy, or Father Dwyer, whatever the hell his name was. Of course, he played with the big bad Los Angeles Rams fearsome foursome. Super Bowl 16 was January of 82 at the Silverdome in Pontiac. Speaking of, so WrestleMania 3 was on Fox Sports 1 tonight. Speaking of the Silverdome. Joe Montana was the MVP, and it was the first of 4 rings for the Niners in the 80s. I forgot who they played in the NFC Championship. D'Amato remembers. I don't remember anything.
It was January 10th. It was the greatest game of all time, and probably the greatest play of all time when Dwight Clark made the catch.
The catch.
The scumbag Cowboys did it again.
Man. How about them Cowboys?
It was one of the greatest days of my life. Beautiful.
I have to say though, quickly, on top of this though, the one of my favorite playoff games of all time was that postseason, and that was that awesome AFC divisional playoff game at the Orange Bowl between the Dolphins and Chargers.
The hook and ladder play,
and fucking Kellen Winslow fucking puking after the game. And I met him. He came to my high school, and I talked to him about that game. I said, I was amazed at how awesome he played in that game. And he goes, I thought I was going to die. And Dr. G would know. He knows that weather. Fucking 95.
It was a hot – even in January, it was a hot night. Yeah, he blocked 2 field goals, made a ton of catches.
Yeah.
It was a great game. The Chargers had a big lead in the first half. They were up like 24-0. And then Shula went from Woodley to Don Strzok. Right before the half, they hit on that hook and ladder, and cut the lead down to 24-17, and then the second half was just back and forth and overtime too. The Dolphins actually had a couple of chances to win it on field goals, but Winslow was because he was so tall, he blocked a couple of field goals, and eventually the Chargers pulled through. But then the Chargers had to go from 90 degrees; they had to play the Ice Bowl, one of the coldest games in Cincinnati for the championship game, and they had no chance.
Was it consistently that hot in January when you were a kid?
No. The Florida weather is nice from like October to like April. That's really unusual.
Yeah, that was a rare hot night. Hot. Yeah.
I mean, crazy. It's still warm. You could still get really hot days in Florida, but not to that extent normally.
But yeah, but Johnny's right. They went from the Chargers went from 95 degrees to 95 below. In the ice bowl, the freezer bowl in Cincinnati, the Bengals, of course, won. Ken Anderson, great quarterback, but they would fall short in the Super Bowl, and the 49ers would win their first of four in the decade.
I can't get on your boys too bad. That was Danny White, and the 49ers had the home field in that championship game versus Dallas. And even after the catch, Dallas, Danny White was leading them down, and then he got into the 49ers territory, but he got sacked and then a fumble, and the 49ers recovered, and that was it. So there was time after the catch to mount the comeback.
No, there absolutely was. No, there absolutely was, yeah. It was a tough one. But Niners win their first of four Super Bowls. Now, let's fast forward to the 82 season, and guess what? Another big fucking goddamn labor mess. Unlike 1981, though, this was the players who probably were a little too pushy. They had just gotten a collective bargaining agreement like the year before, and something got up Gene Upshaw's ass, and they decided to walk. But unlike 1981, where the owners were clearly the villains, this one, a lot of people thought that the players were the bad guys here, and they were kind of crying over spilled milk. In any event, 57-day strike. They only played 9 games that year, and they would do a winner-take-all 16-team like NCAA tournament, which is pretty cool. So, you know, records and divisions and all that crap went out the window. So on our next episode, 1983, we'll talk about those playoffs because that happened mostly in 83. But there was a strike, and for a good hunk of the fall of 82, we did not have football, so that kind of sucked. A big rule change that year, guys, and this is big for you three because your greatest player of all time ate up this statistic. For the first time in 1982, the NFL recorded sacks. And, of course, two great players, one playing for the New York Football Giants and one playing for the King of Rhode Island's team, the J-E-T-S, Jets there, ate up sacks like crazy in the 80s. We'll talk more about that as we move ahead. College football, the Panthers of Pitt were the preseason number one, but it was another team from Pennsylvania that won the national championship. The Nittany Lions of Penn State to beat Georgia 27-23 to win the Sugar Bowl and the national championship. It would end up being the final game for Heisman Trophy winner Herschel Walker of Georgia, and he would end up staying in the Northeast, guys. He would play at the Meadowlands, but he wouldn't play for the Giants or Jets. Stay tuned to 1983 to figure out who Herschel Walker plays for. He plays at the Meadowlands, but not for the Jets or the Giants. Two big moments in college football that year. The play. Even if you're not a football fan, you know what I'm talking about. The Cal-Stanford game. John Elway's last game as Stanford quarterback. And, of course, you know, the kickback and the multiple laterals. And the
band is on the field.
The field. And the fucking tuba player gets fucking assaulted. he gets fucking killed. And then, of course, Bear Bryant for our good friend Greg Phillips, the Roll Damn Tide. Bear Bryant coached his final college football game. Bama beat Illinois in the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. 4 weeks later, he would die of a heart attack at the age of 69. In hockey, I'll say it for you, Johnny, the fucking scumbag Islanders beat the Canucks 4-0.
Who cares?
To win their third straight cup.
A horrible final. They swept Vancouver. Had no shot.
No, they had no shot. NHL season notes, divisions were realigned. We won't go too crazy into this. Divisions were realigned. Teams were moved around. We would get the Prince of Wales Trophy and the Campbell Bowl for the two sides. Wayne Gretzky, 50 goals in 50 games. He scored 50 in 39 games. He would finish with 76. He had 92 goals that year. He was a fucking animal. Mike Bossy set a regular season record for right wingers with 147 points in an 80-game season. And for you, Dr. G, this was the final season for the Colorado Rockies. Where would the Rockies move, sir?
To New Jersey.
Yes, and they would, of course, become the Devils and play in that shiny, beautiful new building, the Brendan Byrne Arena. I can't even say that with a straight face.
The sad thing is, it was nice for those days.
Yeah.
You know?
And also Brenda Burns.
Except for it didn't change.
Also, the arena had a lot of great wrestling cards in that arena.
Oh yeah,
yes, they did. Absolutely,
some summer slams.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
How many years ago was that? It just came up in my Facebook memories of when we went.
Extreme Rules 2014.
Yeah. Extreme Rules just came up the pictures of me and Mato. We were
the eyes eye, yeah. The eyes
eye. I did my Shawn Michaels pose.
Yep. I got to see Evolution. It was pretty awesome. Yes, it was. One of the single biggest league turnarounds in history. The Jets went from 9 wins and 32 points to 33 wins and 80 points. We love the Jets. The Hall of Fame class in the NHL, Yvon Konwaye, Norm Ullman, and one of your favorite guys, Mr. Tomato,
Rod Gilbert.
Number 9. Yeah. My brother played golf with Rod Gilbert right before the 93-94 season. Tom Watson won 2 of the 3 majors in golf in 1982. In tennis, Jimmy Connors won the last – he won 2 of the 4 Grand Slams for the men. Martina and Chrissy split the women. Gordon Johncock won the Indy. Bobby Allison – won Daytona, and the World Cup went on in 1982, and Viva Italia! The Italians.
Yes, the Azzurri.
The Azzurri defeated West Germany 3-1, and that was in Spain.
Baggio.
Yes. Oh, we'll talk about Baggio. We'll talk about Baggio in a few years. Quick boxing notes before we move on.
That's a hot year in boxing.
Yeah, it was a huge year in boxing. We'll talk about that now before we move on to TV with Mr. Atherton. I remember this fight a lot. I don't remember it being as racial as it was until I watched the 30 for 30, and that is, of course, the world heavyweight title fight between Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney, the White Hope. I mean, I don't know how the hell they pulled that crap off in 1982. Everybody would be losing their fucking minds now if that happened. Let's be honest. I was kind of, even at 9 years old, I was kind of paying attention to boxing. I had to think this guy had a snowball's chance in hell of beating Larry Holmes. I mean, Larry Holmes was a fucking stud in 82.
He was.
And he beat the fucking shit out of Jerry Cooney. And no knock on Jerry Cooney, but he had no chance.
He made it to 13 rounds, though. That was
he survived, but he took a pound.
That was a feat in itself. Yeah, Cooney didn't want no part of that, but that was more the promoters with the White Hope stuff.
Yeah. Sugar Ray Leonard, that fucking pussy, announced his second of 500 retirements. I fucking hate him. Aaron Pryor, who is an awesome fighter, retained his World Junior Welterweight title by knocking out Alexis Arguello, who's another awesome fighter. And then a terrible event that happened, and I remember this cover of Sports Illustrated, and I think this was a 30 for 30 short. Ray Boom Boom Mancini retained his WBA World Lightweight title, knocking out Duk Koo Kim in 14 rounds, but he had – I mean, he took – and this is another guy who just – I mean, Ray Mancini just fucking pummeled this poor bastard. And a few days later, 5 days later, he died in the hospital from severe head trauma. And that was the last fight that would go 15 rounds. From that point forward, all boxing matches, regardless of – all title fights, regardless of weight class, would be down to 12 rounds from 15.
Yeah, I remember that they showed the fight live on CBS because as a replacement for football.
Yep.
And I watched it on a Sunday afternoon, and then it was a war. Kim fought to the end, and
he did. They both beat the shit out of each other, but it did not end well, unfortunately. So no Olympics that year. We won't talk about Olympics for a couple more years. And that is it for sports in 1982. Thankfully, I don't think we talk about any more labor bullshit for a few years. Yeah. And that's a good thing. Let us now go to the boob tube. Mr. Atherton, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. So talking about the top rated programs of the 82-83 television season, 60 Minutes, the great news program that would always come on right after football. on Sundays, then followed by Dallas.
On a side note, sorry, I want to mention one thing, Andy. You just triggered something very quickly. Mm-hmm. You mentioned 60 Minutes. The 1982 football season was the first year that they instituted the 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Before that, everybody played at 1 o'clock, regardless of where they were in the country. and Baltimore broke balls about it, and there was other bullshit. But this was the first year, because the way you said that is because 60 Minutes and, of course, Murder, she wrote. But that wouldn't be for a few more years. Mm-hmm. But that just triggered my head because you just mentioned 60 Minutes. And so that was this was the first year that there were actually 4 o'clock East kickoffs. So, and then of course it was the NFL today, which was awesome. I'm sorry, continue.
That's okay. So then we had, we had Dallas, MASH, Magnum PI, Dynasty, Three's Company, Simon & Simon, Falcon Crest.
Three's Company put the boob in boob tube.
There you go.
Damn right.
The Love Boat.
Damn right.
The A Team. A couple other top 30. We had the Jeffersons, The Fall Guy. Great theme song.
like Dr. G's quarantine watching right here.
One Day at a Time, Heart to Heart, Trapper John, MD, Hill Street Blues. That's incredible. Laverne Shirley and Happy Days are still hanging on. And Dukes of Hazzard. So some TV shows that ended in 82. We had Barney Miller, Bosom Buddies, after a short run. Mork and Mindy, also another short run. Talk about short runs. Police Squad lasted 6 episodes.
Oh, come on.
I know. Sucks.
I know. Do you guys know what happened every episode with the guest star?
Yeah, they died.
They killed him off in the opening credits.
yeah.
Taxi.
Tremendous.
And, another great show. Love Taxi. The Incredible Hulk. Lou Grant, WKRP in Cincinnati. Harper Valley, which only lasted for a season. Little House on the Prairie. End of that year, and Laverne and Shirley. So,
Dr. G, you and I just watched the finale of that when they blew the town up.
Yes. I forget what we were flipping through the stations, and it was
we were just flipping around, and I forgot what channel it was, but they just happened to have the series finale of Little House where they blew up Walnut Grove.
Oh, God.
Michael Landon's like, fuck this shit, no reunions. Blew the whole fucking place up. Pretty funny.
And then premiering in 1982, we had Fame, the TV show. The New Odd Couple, Gloria, Newhart. Oh, love Newhart. Best series finale, in my opinion. The guy, gets hit in the head with a golf ball, and then, wakes up in his previous sitcom, The Bob Newhart Show. You guys remember the series finale for Newhart?
I absolutely do. Where they smoke show Suzanne Plachette's lying next to him.
Yeah, they had to sneak her in so that the audience reaction was genuine.
Awesome.
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers premiered that year off the stage play. Square Pegs, featuring a very young Sarah Jessica Parker. Actually met her last year or the year before at a event for divorce. My girlfriend actually went up to her and said, I love you in Square Pegs, and took a picture with her. So she was like, thank you.
Funny.
She probably doesn't hear that very often anymore. People probably talk about Sex and the City. The A-Team. Oh, God. Loved that show as a kid.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Love the
18. A show that finished dead last that year, but went on to become one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Family Ties, another great 80s sitcom.
Probably my favorite 80s sitcom.
Mm-hmm. Knight Rider, with the great William Daniels as the voice of Kit.
Yes.
And the Hoff in the title and as Michael Knight. Mama's Family, the spinoff from the Carol Burnett Show.
Mm-hmm.
Remington Steel. With Pierce Brosnan.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Remington Steele, stay tuned to the future episodes of the James Bond miniseries to talk more about Remington Steele.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
And St. Elsewhere. Sorry, that year. And Silver Spoons.
Speaking of William Daniels, St. Elsewhere. He was a busy man.
Mm-hmm. And also that year, a couple of made-for-TV movies miniseries. We had The Elephant Man. And then The Blue and the Gray, featuring a very young Patrick Swayze.
I remember that.
Was that North and South? I can't remember.
No, that was North and South.
Yeah, sorry. Blue and the Gray, I don't know. I get my Civil War miniseries confused sometimes.
Your Civil War epics.
Saturday morning cartoons, we were watching The Best of the Super Friends, The Pac-Man, Little Rascals, Richie Rich Show, Mork and Mindy, Laverne Shirley Franz had a show, The Scooby and Scrappy-Doo Puppy Hour, The Flintstone Funny, Shirt Tales, which I don't remember what that was about, The Smurfs, The Gary Coleman Show, The Incredible Hulk and the Amazing Spider-Man, The Jetsons, the Speed Buggy, Sylvester and Tweety and Daffy and Speedy, Gilligan's Planet, something called Pandemonium, and Popeye and Olive Comedy Show. And one of our favorite shows, Saturday Night Live, That was season 8 from 1982 to 83. Your cast included Robin Duke, Mary Gross, Brad Hall, Tim Kazurinsky, Gary Kroeger, a very young Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Eddie Murphy, and Joe Piscopo. The producer, Dick Ebersol, he brought back the show's cold opening that ended with Live from New York at Saturday Night Live, as well as the monologues by the hosts. He also changed Weekend Update's name for the second time to Saturday Night News, and Brad Hall got the gig as the new anchor. Some notable moments of the season included Drew Barrymore hosting the show as the youngest person ever at the time. And during that specific episode, the audience at home was given a chance to vote on whether or not Andy Kaufman should be banned from the show. The vote was conducted via a 1-900 number. And at the end of the show, the audience spoke, and Andy Kaufman was barred from ever performing on Saturday Night Live again.
That's funny.
And another notable moment was when Eddie Murphy had to host the show as a cast member. He had to substitute for his 48 Hours co-star, Nick Nolte. He became the only person to have hosted the show while still a cast member. He announced, live from New York, it's the Eddie Murphy Show. It's still awesome. A great episode. And then in the season premiere, Chevy Chase hosted. They performed via satellite from Burbank, and Queen was the musical host. I mean, if you look down the musical guests, as well as the hosts, but more about the musical guests, it's a who's who of 80s powerhouses, even some.
Absolutely.
You know, you have
Duran Duran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, George Thorogood, The Clash.
Tom Petty. Yeah.
Men at Work.
Men at Work.
Kenny Loggins. Joe Jackson. Squeeze.
Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Yeah.
I'm sure Laura Branigan sang that fucking song. In that
Gloria,
episode
baby. Brothers. Yes, yes.
Yeah, she's probably wearing a blues jersey, a twat.
Well, rest in peace.
the bus boys singing Boys Are Back
in Town. Speaking of 48 Hours. Yeah.
Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warren singing from it's theme from, what was it, Officer and Gentleman?
Officer and Gentleman, Up Where We Belong.
Yeah.
We'll talk about
Squeeze,
that.
Squeeze, Lionel Richie. This is an 80s fest right here.
Petty, Randy Newman. Mm-hmm. God, Musical Youth,
Michael McDonald.
Yep.
Forget. So we're talking about the Emmy Awards that took place on September 19th of that year, hosted by John Forsythe and Marlo Thomas. Your outstanding comedy series was Barney Miller. Your outstanding drama series once again was Hill Street Blues. Your outstanding comedy a variety music program was Night of 100 Stars. Your outstanding drama special was A Woman Called Golda, which was actually a syndicated show. Your lead actor in a comedy series was Alan Alda from MASH. Your lead actress in the comedy series, Carol Kane from Taxi. Repeating is win from the year before. Outstanding lead actor in a drama series was Daniel J. Travanti from History Blues. And Michael Learned from the show Nurse was your outstanding lead actress in the drama series. Some more TV notes that year was Cable News Network, CNN, initiated an associate channel dubbed CNN2, which featured round-the-clock news in a wheel format. The channel would be renamed CNN Headline News a year later and is now known as HLN. On January 4th, Brian Gumbel begins his 15-year stint as co-anchor of the Today Show on NBC, a event that we were referencing earlier in the show. On July 29th, professional wrestler Jerry Lawler slaps actor Andy Kaufman in the face on the program Late Night with David Letterman. Kaufman responded by throwing coffee and shouting profanities at Lawler. The incident was later revealed to have been staged. Now, do you guys remember watching this? Were you guys paying attention to
yes.
at the time?
Yes, and it was also a big story when they had the angle and the match in Memphis, the whole feud with Lawler and Kaufman. It's I highly recommend seeing it. It's on YouTube. There's an hour special. They used to run it on Comedy Central at the time. It's called I'm From Hollywood, Andy Kaufman. It goes over the whole Kaufman-Lawler feud. It was just tremendous. And at the time, he really played it well. This was still, the kayfabe era. So.
Yeah, he really – Andy Kaufman loved wrestling. He wanted to be a wrestler. Andy Kaufman originally wanted to do this. He was a WWF fan, and he wanted to do this with Vince McMahon Sr., and Vince McMahon Sr. didn't think that would work well. Like, he was, not into that, mixing the, entertainment with the wrestling, meaning, having someone that's not a wrestler enter into that territory. So So I think Bill Apter actually hooked Kaufman up with Jerry Lawler.
Yep.
And the rest is history. I mean, that was great. I remember because my dad and I were big wrestling fans, and my dad, I remember him telling me about it. Obviously, I didn't see it live, and it was such a big story. It was all over the news and everything, you know, because again, somebody getting slapped on a TV show, and David Letterman's reaction was priceless. His face, like he had no clue what the hell was going on.
Yeah, he wasn't in. He wasn't in on it.
I mean,
which made it better.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, you know, and Jerry Lawler thought that he was going to get arrested because, you know, obviously they didn't know what was going on and the way, you know, Andy Kaufman sold it. And
at
first,
I'm going to sue you. I'm a Hollywood celebrity. I'm going to sue you.
You're crazy.
And at first, they couldn't believe, you know, Jerry Lawler, I heard him say in an interview, he couldn't believe that they asked him to come back out again, you know, for the show, you know, after the, you know, the slap of that segment of where he slapped him. So he was, he was shocked that they, but Letterman was just like, he didn't know what to do. You know, it was priceless. I one of the greatest moments in television history. I mean, really, I think it is one of the top, it's in the top 50, I think, of all time, I think, of, you know, television history. So, I mean, just good stuff. I mean, and Andy Kaufman was really, really into it. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted to be a professional wrestler.
Oh, yeah. He was playing such the intergender champion, you know, making fun of Memphis and everything, and just tremendous. If you're, into comedy and wrestling, it's a must-watch. I mean, and did all that shit like did on Friday nights or whatever that thing was with Michael Richards, where they had no clue that he was trying just to stir up some shit. You know, he was crazy, but he loved it. He was so passionate about it, and he understood, like, he also understood the world. Like, he knew he was supposed to get his ass kicked. You know, he wasn't, you know, he was out there to be ridiculous. He wasn't.
Yeah,
out
I
there
mean,
to
make- Lawler said he really respected the business. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, he used to call on Jerry Lawler, Mr. Lawler. He wouldn't even, like, call him by his first name. You know, it's just good stuff. I mean, I now I got to go back and watch that special on YouTube again, Johnny, that you mentioned.
Yeah, right. I'm from Hollywood. It's tremendous.
The way they build it up
with him wrestling the women, there's one scene where he wrestles like this 300-pound hog, and he really rubs his face like in a concrete. And he's like, come on, baby. Come on, baby. And he's really, and like Bob Zood had to pull him off saying, Andy, you really hurt her.
Well, was that the one where was that his pool or something?
Yes. Yeah. He's like, come on, baby. And he's it's hilarious.
Oh my god. That's why I said this is what I remember from 1982.
Yeah. He's like, I'm Memphis, and he's making fun of Memphis, Tennessee.
I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So he goes, you women should be home washing the potatoes.
I mean, Jerry said that they had to especially escort him out of buildings and stuff like that because they wanted to kill him. They seriously wanted to kill the guy. He was
one of the greatest heels ever.
Talk about heel heat. You ain't going to get that again.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He's probably one of the greatest heels of all time, and he wasn't even an actual wrestler. So
I actually own an Andy Kaufman wrestling figure from the Classic Superstars line.
Ah, yes.
I didn't even know they made one.
Yeah, he's got the neck brace and everything.
That's true. Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, if it's awesome. It's in storage right now. Like, unfortunately, not in the packaging, but it's in a Ziploc bag. You know, but I'll find it.
It was tremendous. That's a classic right there.
Mm-hmm. Also, on October 22nd, Susan Stafford, who the hell is she? But she departed as the co-host of the NBC game show Wheel of Fortune to do humanitarian work. Auditions are careful, who will replace her with Vanna White, formerly replacing Stafford on December 13th. And Vanna White still is the co-host. She actually got a chance to host the show while Pat Sajak was having like some kind of procedure or something not long ago. And yeah, it's 38 years later, and she's still turning letters. Pretty wow. amazing. On December 11th of that year, ESPN broadcast its first live college football game, simulcasting the Independence Bowl. It was a matchup between Kansas State University and University of Wisconsin. And finally, on December 29th, surround sound is introduced for home use by the Dolby Company. And that's going to bring an end to television in 1982. And that's going to bring an end to the first half of Year in Pop 1982. But stick around. We got news, music, and movies to go through. So, with Scott Criscolo, J. Arsenio D'Amato, and Dr. G. George Rubellino, I am Andy Atherton. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, Pop Feeders, to the newest episode of The Year in Pop 1982. I am Scott Criscolo, along with Andy Atherton, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato, and the Doctor, Dr. G. George Rubellino. Speaking of the Doctor, him and I will be with you this weekend for another episode over on the other side of the hallway, the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed with the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special, and we actually will have a fresh content to talk about, Doctor. I was a little stunned when I saw that pop up today. Instead we were going to talk more classic matches, but the NWA YouTube channel today actually released the episode of Superpower that they were going to release 6 or 7 weeks ago leading up to the Crockett Cup. They decided to release it today, so we'll go over that episode of Superpower and then talk about the big announcement that William Patrick Colgan had at the end of the show. So we'll talk about that this week on the Saturday Special. Of course, all sorts of awesome stuff on the wrestling feed. Of course, Place to Be podcast with myself and my PIC, Mr. Rosero. We'll be recording this coming week the Survivor Series Showdown leading up to Survivor Series 90. So stay tuned for that. Police Nation's main event, myself, Nate, and Steve. Of course, Mr. Atherton, the Great Debate Wrestling Edition. New episode up over on our feed. You are joined by Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and Chad Campbell. The newest episode of my three favorite limey friends, the Special Relations Podcast, the trio of UK mates joined by Sean Kidd to discuss some stuff. Newest episode of Row One Seat One, Ben's joined by Robert O'Neill. Don't forget, of course, our other feeds that we help out, as Mr. Atherton mentioned, the Jenny Position and the North South Podcast Connection. Speaking of the pop feed, sir, what else is going on over here besides this fine program?
Oh, well, there's lots of fun stuff happening over here. Talking about Laughing Theater earlier, Johnny, you were on a recent episode. We discussed Animal House. We watched it. Tremendous time. Anytime hanging out with you was tremendous. Also joining me on Laughing Theater was Mr. Peter Winson. Good old greetings from Allentown himself. We watched The Goonies. Never thought I'd learn about, was it Maritime Salvage, International Maritime Salvage Law, but I did. So Peter is a complete. Plus, we're doing lots of bonus episodes of Laughing Theater. We did an episode with Just Friends. That was with Logan Crosland and Sean Kidd. And I'll talk about the next episode at the end of the show. That it's going to be quite interesting. Listen once you hear it. Also, check out the It Was a Thing on TV. Those guys come every week watching obscure, short-lived television. Scott, we talked about it earlier, the James Bond Legacy 5-part series has begun mm-hmm. on set, whatever you want to call it. You and Tech are breaking down the James Bond franchise, and you're doing mm-hmm. it kind of an interesting way. How are you guys doing it there?
Well, we decided instead of doing 24 parts and doing all 24 movies
like
individually.
The teacher in Back to School.
In Back
I only
to School,
have one question.
One question.
And 24 parts.
That's tremendous. We decided to break it down by guy. So, of course, last Monday we did part one, which was about Sean Connery. So we did his movies and the birth of the franchise. This past week, yesterday, as we're recording, we did The Others. So we talked about the one movie done by George Lazenby and the two movies in the late 80s done by Timothy Dalton. This coming Monday is one of the big ones, because that's Tex and my favorite Bond, and that is, of course, sadly, the only Bond actor that is no longer with us, and that is Sir Roger Moore. And then, of course, we will have a Pierce Brosnan episode, and we will wrap up with a Daniel Craig. So stay here to the Pop Feed every Monday between now and my birthday, the anniversary of the website, actually, the birthday of the website, June 1st. And there will be a fresh part of this mini-series every Monday, 9 a.m. it drops, both on the Pop Feed and on PlayStimination.com. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. Fun getting Tech into the fold. Hopefully he will be a fixture here on the Pop Feed. We've already got an idea for our next Pop Goes the Classics series, Mr. Atherton. We'll discuss it in the boardroom. But anyway, it's a fun series. I'm happy about it. I'm happy that Tech has joined the fold. He's awesome. You guys know him well. He's a great guy. So it's good to have him in the fold. So, yeah, we enjoyed it. So I hope everyone's enjoying it.
Also, check out on the feed right now our newest live watch series. It is an action movie watch called Piece of the Action. And that is hosted by our good friend Matt Souza. On the first episode, the debut episode, he welcomed the Queen Bee herself, Jennifer Smith, and they watch The Matrix, the classic. Hopefully they don't watch the sequels or the show may get canceled. Just kidding. And then also a huge drop. Just this week, Diamond Conversations. Chad sits down with 3-time MLB All-Star, World Series MVP. World Series champion, sorry. 4-time National League Bank champion, Pittsburgh Pirate legend, Mad Dog Bill Matlock. So that is a tremendous get.
Love that.
So everybody check that out. Chad does a great job on that show. And don't forget to check out everything else going on at PlaceNation.com. The greatest junk food tournament is underway. We are about halfway through round one. We're in the cookies region. You guys are voting. You're checking it out. What do you guys think so far? You see any of your favorites? Who do you think is going to win? Who's going to come out of this?
I got to be honest. Half of the ones I've never even fucking heard of. So there are some that I've skipped. I'll be honest. I forgot which one it was. It was in the chips region, but there were two chips and I looked at them both and I went, I don't even know what the fuck these are. I'm sad that did Funyuns lose? I think Funyuns lost.
I'd have to check the
Funyuns were a big, my buddy that I went to high school with, loved Funyuns. He in fact, the last bag of Funyuns he ate when we were seniors, I have the empty bag in my yearbook. So Funyuns were a big part of the lunch table.
It lost to Lay's barbecue potato chips.
Oh, Lay's barbecue. God. Ugh.
And Wise Onion Rings lost also. So,
and 20%, I don't know what the percentage is now, but when I voted, 20%, Dr. G, you'll be devastated by this. 20% of voters did not vote for Oreos. That's amazing. I thought Oreo was like the all-American cookie.
Well,
it's
the number one seed.
I know, right?
On Facebook, like, though, on Facebook, I see there went an 87% to 13%.
Oh, okay. So
coconut creams.
Oh, that's right. The fake Samoas. That's right. They were going up against the fake Samoas. Yeah, right. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. I think
Justin was asking about Hydrox?
Yeah, no.
Today?
Yeah, Hydrox.
Econo Oreo, really.
Well, Hydrox.
You know, I was noticing pretzels was doing pretty well.
Oh, there's a lot of pretzels.
A lot of the pretzel products were doing well, which I love pretzels.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to fill out a 32 bracket. You got to stretch a little bit sometimes. but what's funny, though, is Hydrox actually predate Oreos. They came out first. Little known fun fact here.
Did not know that.
Johnny, you've been voting there?
Oh, definitely. There's really... I don't know what you guys are complaining about. There's really nothing that I don't like, so tough choices to pick. I think Cheez-Its is going to make a run. Yeah, looking at all these snacks, it's making it very hard to flatten the belly curve.
Let's see.
It is the fat
Invitational. So.
Well, let's see. We got Let's look at a couple of the matchups coming up in the Cookies region that's going up the day after we record this. We got the number 28 Stroop Waffles going up against number 5 Milano's. Milano's are a classic cookie.
I like Stroop Waffles too. I do like Milano's.
Milano's go all the way.
Then we got the number 21 Chips Ahoy Soft Bake versus number 12 Famous Amos Chocolate Chip Cookies.
Chocolate chip versus chocolate chip.
Yeah.
Dr. Famous Beautiful. Famous because he hates soft cookies. So.
Here we go. Italian Tricolor Cookies at number 20 going up against the Animal Crackers at 13.
Oh, we know who your wife. We know what your wife's going to vote for, Jay.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I like him.
That's good. I think that's so going to be that's gonna be very close to the end. And then at 29, Swiss Fudge Cookies going up against number 4, Samoa's.
The real ones. We know Dr. G's underdog run Swiss fudges.
Swiss fudge is the best.
Those are great.
That's my stretchy cookie coconut. Right there.
That was Dr. G's final exam cookie. We used to have to go to the store when we were in college and buy like fucking six packs of
that's like stress eating runs like that.
Flatten the belly curve.
Oh yeah.
So don't forget, check those out. Shit. They go up on the Place of Nation, Greatest Junk Food Tournament page, but also there are several groups and several pages. It does get shared too. Unfortunately, our Twitter is under construction or closed for business at the moment, but we're working on that to get those polls up on Twitter. And we won't mention what happened there.
Boris is going to be very upset.
Oh boy.
I cannot sabotage this tournament this time.
The butts.
No, I fucked it up. Don't ask. That one's on me. Don't ask.
That's really
a long corporate bullshit story. Never mind. Oh, God. We'll fix it somehow.
All right. So that's what's going on here at Placement Nation. But let's get back to the year in pop 1982. And we're going to talk about the news. So we'll go over this quickly because, we're more about the pop culture here. AT&T has ordered a breakup. It was they had a monopoly, and the U.S. government's deal stated that they had to get control of the Bell system, called Ma Bell. Actually affected my mom because my mom worked for that company and ended up going to work for Dynex after this. And then Argentina invaded the Falkland Islands on March 19th. The U.K. sent the Royal Navy, the RAF, and the Army to retake possession of the Falkland Islands during the conflict. A battleship, the HMS Sheffield, was sunk, as well, and the nuclear submarine HMS Conqueror sank the Argentine cruiser General Belgrano. Argentina then surrendered on June 14th. It's kind of a made fun of war because it kind of lasted, 3 months, which is kind of not long. The last largest cash robbery in history occurred in New York when $9,800,000 is stolen from an armored car. Around 700,000 demonstrators gathered in New York City Central Park protesting the proliferation of nuclear weapons. The International Whaling Commission decides to end commercial whaling, which is huge for the Greenpeace movement. Tylenol capsules laced with potassium cyanide killed 7 in Chicago on September 29th. Do you guys remember that happening?
That I do remember.
Yeah, I do too.
From what I remember, I think it was like it happened to like a few people, and the family, like family members came in and found them and were distraught, had crying and headaches, ended up taking the Tylenol themselves and dying. So, it was tainted all over the place. And I think we had something else happen locally. I think it happened again in New York, not far from where I grew up. Lech Walesa was a leader of the Outlaw Solidarity Movement, was released after 11 months in jail. Yasser Arafat elected the president of the Palestinian National Council. The first implant of a permanent artificial heart by Dr. Robert Jarvik designed it. Leonid Brezhnev, general secretary of the Communist Party, dies of a heart attack while in office. Former KGB head Yuri Andropov is selected to become the general secretary of the Soviet Communist Party's Central Committee 2 days later. The Vietnam Veterans War Memorial in Washington, D.C. is dedicated. The first commercial use of genetic engineering is used when human insulin is produced by bacteria. Klaus von Bülow is found guilty of his attempted murder of his wife in Newport, Rhode Island. And John DeLorean. is arrested for selling cocaine to undercover FBI agents. He is later found not guilty due to entrapment. So those are your major news stories in 1982. And we'll move on to music with Mr. Criscolo. Scott, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Atherton. And by the way, there was a great movie that came out later in the decade involving Klaus von Bülow and Sonny. I think John Malkovich. No, not John Malkovich. What the fuck is his name? Shit. Great actor, too. Played Klaus von Bülow. Fuck, I can't think of his name. Glenn Close played Sonny von Bülow, his wife. I can't remember who played the nurse, but a really good actor played Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons played Klaus von Bülow. I forgot when that movie came out, 88, 89, something like that. Anyway, and there was plenty – we were talking about in the break, plenty of movies about John DeLorean. 1982, as Mr. D'Amato alluded to in our open, was another seminal year for music. Obviously, 1982 was our first full year of MTV. Of course, MTV debuted in August of 81, so 82 was the first full year. And as we'll talk about here, the 70s was the album decade, and that's indicative of radio too. And the 80s became the singles decade because I'm going to mention a ton of albums that had really one song on it. So anyway, here is your top 20 Billboard songs for 1982. So if I missed the song, there were a ton of great songs in 1982 and a lot of good one-hit wonders, which I'll mention in a minute. But I'm going to just do the top 20 for time purposes. I won't read all 100. At number 20, Don't Talk to Strangers by Rick Springfield, which was on his follow-up album to Working Class Hero. We'll get to that in a second. Number 19, one of my favorite songs from this band, Waiting for a Girl Like You by Foreigner, which I believe, Johnny, is on the 4 album, if I remember correctly, which is a great Foreigner album, by the way. At number 18, we have You Should Hear How She Talks to You, Melissa Manchester. It's a good song. Number 17 is a song we hear a lot on the on Yacht Rock Channel, that is Key Largo by Bertie Higgins. Number 16, a song that should have been playing through the air of Tampa, Florida this past April. And that was 8675309 Jenny from Tommy Tutone. At number 15, I Can't Go For That, No Can Do from Hall & Oates. Number 14, my actual favorite song from this band. It is not the other single that people think of, but it's this one. And that is Rosanna by Toto. I love that song. Number 13, great one-hit wonder. My sister got me into this song, Harden My Heart by Quarterflash. Used to hear the shit out of that on the radio. Number 12, Chariots of Fire from the movie by Vangelis. A bunch of British guys running in their underwear on the beach. How exciting. Number 11, Soft Cell with Tainted Love. That was a great video on MTV, by the way. In the top 10, at number 10, Hard to Say I'm Sorry by Chicago, when they started transitioning into the soft rock. Number 9, this guy's last single, Abracadabra by Steve Miller Band. Number 8, Hurt So Good by John Cougar. Number 7, Jack and Diane by John Cougar, which I think got played to fucking death, but it was a hot song at the time. Played to death, Jack and Diane. As much as Dr. G hates Hotel California is as much as I hate fucking Jack and Diane. Number 6, Don't You Want Me by the Human League, another great MTV video. Number 5, Centerfold by Jake Giles Band.
Talk about
from the
videos.
Awesome album. Yes, tremendous video from the great album Freeze Frame. Number 4, Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, one of my favorite duets. Number 3, I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Number 2, Survivor with Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. G knows what movie that's from. We'll talk about that movie with Mr. Atherton in our final segment. And the number 1 song of 1982, which also at the time set a record with 11 straight weeks at number 1, Physical by Olivia Newton-John, which is a fucking hot video.
The music video banned in Salt Lake City.
Yes, because two guys were making out in the shower. So very interesting. But there's your top 20 songs. As for albums, there was a ton of great albums in 1982. I'm going to give the top 20, but before I do that, I'm going to mention some random ones only because, for various reasons, albums that I think deserve a little mention. Some albums that came out in 82, All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes by Pete Townsend, who started to branch out a little bit for a solo career after I think it was Face Dances came out in 82, the Who album, which is a great album, by the way. If D'Amato can help me out here, I think that's the one that has You Better You Bet on it, I think. I know it has Athena. Is that the one that has You Better You Bet face dances? I think it does. I don't know if it has Eminence Front on it. That might be another album. But anyway, Pete Townsend broke off and did All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes, which has a couple of great singles. Let My Love Open the Door. I'm pretty sure Rough Boys is on there too. Number 82 on that year, Get Nervous by Pat Benatar. Tremendous album. Vacation by the Go-Go's, which was their follow-up to Beauty and the Beat, which was their top album. By this point, though, the Go-Go's were starting to break apart a little bit. Drugs and et cetera and egos. Billy Idol's debut album came out in 1982. Walk Among Us by the Misfits, good album. Diver Down by Van Halen, which, of course, has their cover of Pretty Woman on that album.
Also, You Really Got Me is on that too, right?
No, You Really Got Me is on the debut. Oh. Is on the first album.
Oh, okay.
Is on their debut album. Yeah. No, the big song on Diver Down was their cover of
Pretty Woman.
A Pretty Woman
featured.
Yeah.
What movie is it featured in?
Pretty Woman. Oh,
no, the Van Halen.
The Van Halen version. Good question.
You guys know Dr. G.
D'Amato. Either? I don't know.
No.
Great 80s no. movie. Weird Science.
Oh, yeah.
Weird Science.
Of course, Kelly LeBrock is walking through the mall and all the guys just stop and
That's
stare.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is right. Excellent. Good call, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Simon and Garfunkel's Concert in Central Park live album came out in 82. Of course, we talked about that in the last episode. That was the concert that was live on HBO from Central Park. Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet by Rick Springfield, which was the follow-up to Working Class Dog, which was the album that had Jesse's Girl on it. And I just mentioned the top single from that album, Don't Talk to Strangers. Dexy's Midnight Runners, D'Amato mentioned them earlier. Two Rye was the name of the album. The song that came from that album we will discuss in 1983. Kissing to Be Clever, which was the debut album for a little-known British band with a crazy-looking lead singer, Culture Club. More on them in the following year. Chicago 16 by Chicago. Again, that came out. David Foster started taking over as producer, and they got more into the soft pop rock genre. Special Forces by 38 Special, which had the awesome song Hold On Loosely. The Dreaming by Kate Bush. Aldo Nova with his Lone album. The reason I mention this is because he had a one-hit wonder staple on MTV, and that is the song Fantasy. Can't you live this fantasy life? That was like that was played to death on MTV. Eye in the Sky by Alan Parsons. Great song. A Flock of Seagulls. You're like, who the fuck are they? And this album probably had nothing else on it. But, of course, they had another awesome one-hit wonder. They didn't have a one-hit wonder. They had two songs.
They were two wonder.
They had two songs. But this was the more known song, I Ran. That was on MTV extensively in 1982 and a good hunk of 83 as well.
Hey, do you like Flock of Seagulls? No, I see you do.
Yes. Bad to the Bone, George Thorogood and the Destroyers. A couple of great videos from that album. Remember the great video from the title track where George Thorogood's playing pool with Bo Diddley. It's pretty awesome. Chronic Town by a little-known college band from Atlanta, Georgia, or Athens, Georgia. I'm talking about REM. Picture This by Huey Lewis in the News. H2O by Paul and Oates, which, of course, had I Can't Go for That on it. Mirage by Fleetwood Mac, which, in my opinion, is their last great album. I know they had Tango in the Night a couple years later, but Mirage was probably their last really good album. Lionel Richie's debut album after he separated from the Commodores came out in 1982. Hello, I Must Be Going by Phil Collins. Which was his second solo album. Signals by Rush, which was the follow-up to the awesome Moving Pictures. Night and Day by Joe Jackson, which I'm pretty sure is the one that has Steppin' Out on it, which is a tremendous song. Black Metal by Venom came out that year as well. And yes, Mr. Atherton, another year that we mention Long Island's greatest motherfucker himself, Billy Joel, with another album. And another awesome album, and another platinum album. And that album is The Nylon Curtain. We're going to talk about that for a second, because after the successes of The Stranger and 52nd Street, he switched things up, was a little more heavy for Glass Houses. But here, The Nylon Curtain had a bit more of like a almost like a new wave sound. He seemed very grounded on this album, Dr. G. When you first heard The Nylon Curtain, I'm sure you were equally as stunned at the sound as much as you were putting on Glass Houses, because it was so different than Stranger in 52nd Street.
Yeah, it had a little bit of a Beatles-esque sound to it, some of the songs on the album. All the songs had like a lot of meaning to it, you know, like especially more of a social kind of meeting, you know, with Allentown and Goodnight Saigon. You know, it just a different feel to it, which and he has gone on saying that's one of his most favorite albums that he made, if not his most favorite album. Maybe commercially wasn't his best album, but I think a lot of fans really enjoy the album, and you know, he does many of those songs in concert as well. Does them live. I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite albums by him. Not my most favorite, but definitely one right up there. What do you think, Johnny? Do you like The Nylon Curtain?
I like it a lot, but to describe it, it'd be like a lot more serious rock. You know?
Yeah.
Not so much like Party, you know, the way the songs don't have, you know, the people up dancing and singing along, but they're definitely, I like it, you know.
Maybe Allentown would be
pressure
the only
in Allentown,
one.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely, as you said, more socially relevant songs with a little more meaning, a little more serious, but still kicks ass.
Mm. I mean, one of my favorite songs live that he does is from this album, and Dr. G mentioned it, and it's "Goodnight Saigon,"
yes.
Because we all put our arms around each other and we sway during the chorus, and then of course the military comes behind the stage and. Gee, your wife fucking cries every time.
Yeah, I love it when Allentown in concert, when they have an American flag in our face. That's an emotional moment too,
yes.
When he does that in concert.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, and we will talk more about Billy Joel in 1983. So, suck it, Atherton. All right, let's move on.
I like pressure. You think I hate Billy Joel? Jesus.
You jumped on that bandwagon with the rest of those clowns. anyway, more Billy to come in 80. We do take a break in the 80s. Billy does take a break in the 80s. But anyway, The Nylon Curtain came out in 82. Tug of War, speaking of Paul McCartney, Tug of War came out, solo album for him. And Asia, I loved Asia. And that
Scott has a framed Asia poster in his room.
The guys at the frame store laugh at you when you went there to frame it.
I wish I had. That cover fucking kicks ass. And of course, two tremendous songs. A song I was going to sing in Tampa, Heat of the Moment. I may still sing it someday. And Only Time Will Tell, another great song too. All right. The reason I'm making a big deal out of this is we're talking about the difference between singles and albums. I'm going to give you the top 20 albums of 1982. And you're going to notice that some of these have probably no singles you would think of. But album sales and singles sales were very different in the 80s. So number 20, Upstairs at Eric's by Yazoo.
Yes.
So
Only You.
Which one?
What's the movie? The song Only You.
Oh.
If you're a fan of the movie, I think it's Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'll have to look that up. I'm gonna confirm that when we're doing the movie.
And Situation.
Yeah. At number 19, Bad Brains with their solo, seminal first album. Number 18, American Fool by John Cougar. Now there's a case, two singles off that album. Number 17, Pornography by The Cure, very early in their careers. Number 16, an album my brother played the crap out of, Screaming for Vengeance by Judas Priest, which had a couple of videos. Number 15, Midnight Love by Marvin Gaye. Number 14, Toto 4. Which, of course, had Rosanna and another song, which we'll talk about in 1983. Number 13, Combat Rock by The Clash, which I believe is the album that had Rock the Casbah.
Rock the Casbah, yeah. And Should I Stay or Should I Go?
Yep. And Should I Stay. Number 12, The Lexicon of Love by ABC. Number 11, Shoot Out the Lights by Richard and Linda Thompson. That's big new wave. Number 10, in your top 10, number 10, Imperial Bedroom by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. Number 9, a band from Australia. Now, a lot of these albums that came out in 82, the singles will make a big impact in our next episode in 83. So keep tabs on that. Keep an eye on that. Because Men at Work, with their album Business as Usual, was number 9. But of course, the singles from that album, which we'll talk about extensively in our next episode. Number 8, The Night Fly by Donald Fagen, one half of Steely Dan. Number 7, Roxy Music with Avalon. Now here's number 6 I want to ask you guys about, because I go 50-50 with this guy, I'm not going to lie. But I know this is an album that a lot of people either really love or a lot of people really hate. So I want to ask about it. And that's Nebraska by The Boss. Johnny, are you a fan of this album?
No, it's in the bottom 5.
It's depressing, right?
Not a big Nebraska. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, Dr. G? It's almost like Billy's – it's almost like Bruce's version of The Nylon Curtain, except even more depressing.
I didn't care for that album.
Yeah. Are you a Bruce fan, Andy?
Yeah, I could take him or leave him most times.
This album's just depressing.
Yeah, no, I'm good with this.
Number 5 is and again, Johnny was talking about kind of genres evolving in the 80s. Here's a big one, The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. So as early as 82, we're getting our first taste of rap and hip-hop, because Grandmaster Flash is fucking the godfather, man. At number 4, Rio by Duran Duran. My sister played the shit out of this album.
Same with my sister. But tremendous again, album, though.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we'll talk more about the singles when we get to 1983. Number 3, another album my brother played the crap out of, Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden. Notice all the metal that's in this countdown. Yet metal songs don't hit Billboard charts, but they sell a ton of albums. And here's another example, Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden, which has two great songs, the title track and one of my favorite songs, Run to the Hills. Number 2, 1999 by Prince, tremendous album. Once again, we'll talk about the singles in 1983. And the biggest example of songs we'll talk about in 1983 was from this album, the number one selling album of 1982, and that is, of course, Thriller by Michael Jackson. One of the first vinyl that I ever bought. I think all of us owned it in some capacity if you were that old. If you remember it, and I know most of us do. The 9-song album was produced by Quincy Jones. It featured plenty of hits, and most of the songs we will talk about in our next episode. So I'll hold off on going too crazy about that. So there's all the albums. And again, guys, tons of great albums that came out in 1982. But as we said, albums that didn't have a ton of singles on them. Because singles and albums were kind of splitting apart in the 80s, not as much so in the 70s. And finally, the Grammys from 1982, which was about the songs from 1981. Your Record of the Year, Bette Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes. Song of the Year, Bette Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes. Album of the Year, posthumously given to John and Yoko for Double Fantasy. Of course, John had passed away by that point. Best New Artist, and she made a big splash because she sang the title track to the Bond movie that year, For Your Eyes Only, and I am, of course, talking about Miss Sheena Easton. She was the Best New Artist for 1982 from the songs and stuff released in 1981. So Bette Davis Eyes won 2 of the 3 big awards that year. And that is it for 1982 in music. And again, we mentioned a ton of awesome albums. But on our next episode, we'll get into the songs from that album, because the singles from that album is what dominated the charts in 1983. So we'll get to that in the next episode. That is it for me and music. Mr. Atherton, take us home with the greatness of the big screen.
All right. So in the beginning of that year, on March 29th, was the 54th Annual Academy Awards. Your host was Johnny Carson. Your best picture, Chariots of Fire. Which, I think I've sat through bits and pieces of it. I've never really seen it. Your best director, Warren Beatty for Reds. Oof. Your best actor.
Was this the year that 3-hour movies were great? God.
Yeah, this was when, you know, nothing anybody saw. We usually won Academy Awards. Yep. Best actor was Henry Fonda for On Golden Pond, as well as best actress, Katharine Hepburn for On Golden Pond. Your best supporting actor, Sir John Gielgud. For Arthur, as his role as Hobson. Perhaps you'd like me to come in and wash your dick for
wash
you,
your little, dick for you, little shit.
Hobson, I'm going to bathe. I'll alert the media.
Yes.
I play tennis. I fondle women. Bah! I have weekends off, and I am my own boss. Your best supporting actress was Maureen Stapleton for Reds. Your best original screenplay, Chariots of Fire, written by Colin Wieland. Best adapted screenplay, On Golden Pond by Ernest Thompson. Your most nominations were On Golden Pond with 12. Your most wins, Chariots of Fire, and guess this? Raiders of the Lost Ark, 4 each. Of course, Raiders won all the technical, all the awards were technical awards.
Yes.
Receiving an honorary Oscar that year was Barbara Stanwyck. And Special Achievement Award for Sound Effects Editing was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Some of the top home video releases of 1982, Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, came out on both Betamax and VHS. Charlotte's Web, which is something we watched a lot. My sister was a huge fan. Some more Disney films came out, Fun and Fancy Free. And Tron was released also that year, as well as a bunch of others. And then we had The Parent Trap, Rocky III, which we'll mention in a little while. As well as Babes in Toyland. The Great Muppet Caper, probably my favorite of all the Muppet movies.
I love Great Muppet Caper.
It's tremendous. History of the World Part 1. Oklahoma. And some other classic movies like South Pacific and Swiss Family Robinson. So let's talk about the top 10 now grossing movies in 1982. Starting at number 10, the musical, based on a musical, Annie, starring Carol Burnett. Miss Hathaway. It's something, Miss something else in that movie. But it was, I remember seeing that as a kid quite a bit. A movie I didn't see as a kid, number 9, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, starring Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton. A movie that scared the crap out of me when I first saw it as a kid, Poltergeist.
What a movie. Craig Tremendous horror movie.
Craig T. Nelson, Jo Beth Williams. Kind of a cursed movie,
Yes.
And you know, we talked about Dominique Dunn, also the little girl Heather Thomas.
Heather O'Rourke,
who died having like a procedure, I think, on her heart or something. She died a few years later. And number 7, 48 Hours, probably one of the great buddy comedies of all time with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy. A lot of people argue this is the greatest of the franchise. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Great movie. Best Star Trek movie still.
Best villain. That earwig scene, that ear thing with Paul Winfield.
Oh, yes. With Chekhov. Paul Winfield and Chekhov, yes.
Oh, freaked me out, man. A movie that I hope to get on Laughing Theater one day. Yes. Number 5, Porky's. The whole franchise is great. I mean, the first one, Car Boys, here's your night to remember.
Beulah Balbricker.
Excuse me. You want to put a poster saying, have you seen this tallywacker?
it had a distinctive mole on it.
If you could get through that whole scene where they're all cracking up when they're trying to, she's trying to get like them to find Tommy Turner's dick, basically.
I'll get you, Tommy Turner.
Why do they call her Lassie? Get her upstairs to the boys' locker room. You'll find out. Ooh, with the very young Kim Cattrall.
Yes.
A movie that I saw, I believe, 3 times in the theater, Rocky III.
My favorite Rocky. Mm-hmm. Come on, doctor. Hey, woman. I love when Mr. T whips his veritable dick out at Adrian in that scene. Come on, apartment tonight, and I'll show you a real man. He probably had his pubes shaved into a mohawk, too. I love Apollo Creed is my favorite Rocky character of all time, but Clubber Lang is just like one of the most awesome heels ever. And come on, admit it, Dr. G. When Mickey went, you cried.
Oh, of course. I love it. You know, like I told you, like the Rocky movies, if I turn on the TV now and one of the movies came up, I'd be watching it. That's just one of those movies I could watch at any time. And Rocky III, you know, I go back and forth on which one's my favorite, but Rocky III is definitely, it's either Rocky III or Rocky II for me. Just the pads.
I love Rocky III. I love the soundtrack. I wish he said it. My favorite line is the first Rocky when Mickey didn't have as many good lines in two and half of three as he did in one when the girls went for his autograph, and he tells the girls to get their little chicken asses out of there. That's still one of my favorite Mickey lines of all time. Yeah. Get your little chicken asses out of there.
Also, a big wrestling connection for us
yes.
fans.
Thunder
with
Lips.
Hulk and Mr. T. Yeah.
Yeah, lest we forget, Thunder Lips, the Mountain of Molten Lust. The Ultimate Man versus the Ultimate Meatball. Oh, awesome. And I think there's a figure, right? Wasn't there a Classic Superstars figure, Andy?
Yeah, there might have been. Yeah.
Still my favorite Ric Flair line when he came to WWF in 91. While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles. That's like my favorite Flair line of all time when he came to the WWF. Anyway, yeah. I mean, who doesn't love Rocky III?
So. And number three, An Officer and a Gentleman. Take it or leave it.
That's a chick.
Mm-hmm. A tremendous comedy. And number two, Tootsie.
So, Tootsie's a good movie.
It is. It's tremendous. A great cast. I mean, you just top to bottom. You got Dustin Hoffman playing Michael Dorothy and then Dorothy Michaels. You have his roommate, Bill Murray, a very small part, but has a lot of great lines like, that is one crazy hospital. You have, who is it? I think Gina Davis.
Gina Davis. One of her earliest roles, Gina Davis. Yeah.
Jessica Lange. Who you just fell in love with in that movie. Sidney Pollack. It was a tomato. It was a beefsteak tomato. Michael.
A tomato doesn't do anything. A tomato sits there. A tomato's a tomato. That was a great
back. George Green, Commandant Lassard, playing a sleazeball actor.
Yeah, he's a sleazeball in that one.
You know, and George Terry Garr as the neighbor. There.
Charles Durning was
Jessica
Lange's father. Mm-hmm. The camera guy. How do you feel about Cleveland? who else is in that? I think that's everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that's everybody. But what a cast! This is a great movie. That might be my number one, next to All the President's Men. That's probably my favorite Dustin Hoffman movie.
Yeah,
not Ishtar. Nobody likes that piece of shit. We'll get to that, Donald.
And then the number one grossing movie in America, a movie that I saw four times. I remember riding my bike. I was 9 years old when this movie came out, and it was a big deal back then. E.T. the Extraterrestrial, great family movie, still holds up. What kid, when they were riding their bikes at night, did not envision them rising up and flying through the sky? A tremendous theme, which you'll probably hear played out on the show. And it's Spielberg at his best. Some good comedy in there, memorable lines, good performances by all the kid actors, and the scene with the frogs. Henry Thomas, do you know Henry Thomas is kissing in that scene as Elliot?
Future, who he's kissing?
Yeah, future playmate. Erica Eleniak.
Oh, Erica Eleniak, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a smoke show.
And written the movie was written by Melissa Matheson, who is the then wife of Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous movie. What do you guys have to say about it?
Oh, it's epic. It's an epic. I have the Blu-ray, the collector's edition. It's amazing how, fortunately for them, it didn't affect their legacy as a candy, but M&M's refused to be in the movie because they thought it was going to be a bomb. So thumbs down for M&M's and thumbs up for a little known candy nobody had ever heard of called Reese's Pieces. So, but it didn't really hurt. It didn't hurt M&M's in the long run, obviously, but it definitely helped them helped Reese's Pieces. I remember standing in line at the Forest Theater in West Haven in my hometown. And they locked the doors because it was sold out, and I cried my eyes out. My father, I think, almost left me in the fucking woods. I was I was bawling my eyes out. I wanted to see E.T. so bad. And then we went the next night, and I got in. So, but that's a tremendous movie. Again, 1982 was a great year of sci-fi and some horror, which you'll mention in a minute. Also, some great comedies. 82 is an underrated year for movies, but yeah, I loved it. Doctor or Johnny, you too.
Going back to number seven, 48 Hours, just a huge star-making performance by Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
That was his movie. I remember seeing that as a teen, and a packed house, Long Island, Jewish neighborhood, and Eddie Murphy busting into the scene in the Redneck Bar, and when he walked out of there, everybody clapped in the middle of the movie, gave applause in the middle of the movie for that scene. It was just a star-making performance.
You know what I mean? And blew up my Porsche.
Yeah.
There's a new sheriff in town, and his name's Reggie Hammond.
Yeah. I love Eddie Murphy. Were you an E.T. guy?
I did. I remember it was hard to get tickets, I remember.
Yes, it was.
My mom trying to get it. I mean, it definitely took a while before we were able to get in to see it, but I did see it in the movie theater. I thought it was a good movie. You know, it's probably one of those movies I saw it originally, and I've probably seen it one other time since then, and that's it. Otherwise, I have never really watched it again. You know, like there's certain movies, like I said, the Rockies, I've probably seen 9,000 times. But E.T., I think I've seen maybe twice. But, I mean, I liked it when I saw it, but I can't say I would go out of my way to watch it now, but I enjoyed it at that time.
I have it. They just put out a nice Blu-ray collector's edition. I have it on my shelf.
A tremendous ride at Universal Studios that will never get torn down because they don't want to piss off Sir Steven, which a lot of the attractions there are based on his rides. I mean, the rides are based on his movies. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I don't know if you've ever been on it, but you sit on a bike, you know, and the track is above you. You're elevated, kind of like the Peter Pan ride. It takes place at the end of the movie where you go back to E.T., but you go back to E.T.'s home planet. And at the beginning, when you're about to get on the ride, you hand them, well, they ask you your name, and they hand you a card. And then when you go on a ride, you hand the card in. And then as everybody's leaving, E.T. says goodbye to everybody by name, which is what they put on the card. So as I was leaving,
cool.
It's like, bye, thank you, Andy, Tony. Yeah, it's fun. It's a family ride, which is great. And a tremendous set. You walk through the forest, and it's just like you feel like you're there. Tremendous. Some of the other great movies that came out that year, Airplane 2, the sequel. You know, they bring the band gets back together for that one. Al Pacino flick with Diane Cannon, Author. Here's a movie I watched a lot when I was a kid. The Beastmaster, starring Mark Singer. And Rip Torn is the bad guy in that movie. It was, you know, schlocky cult shit. But, you know, you have the Black Tiger. You have those little, ferrets. And you have those, there's some scary stuff in that movie. There are those creatures that, I don't know what they are, but they had, like, webbing or something like that. And they walked into them and they closed around you. They basically took all your flesh off and dropped you as bones. So. But a tremendous cult movie, pre-V for Mr. Mark Singer. Blade Runner, starring Harrison Ford.
What an amazing movie. Again, great sci-fi, but an amazing movie. Ridley Scott, fantastic.
Yes, cult classic, Cat People. The first Conan the Barbarian comes out.
Arnold.
Yeah, here you go. Here's another great Creepshow.
Love Creepshow.
Nice anthology movie.
Stephen King.
Another movie that scared me for different reasons, The Dark Crystal.
Tremendous animation. I have that. I think I have that animation.
The Freaky Puppets.
Yep, was Freaky Puppets. That sounds like a movie, too. Freaky Puppets. No, that was a good movie.
That's After Dark. Diner, starring a lot of future stars.
Oh, yes.
Diner. Baltimore Colts anthem played at the wedding. Yes, very good. First look at Mickey Rourke, I think, in that movie.
Yeah.
Gutenberg, Kevin Bacon,
Daniel Stern, I think is in that.
Yeah.
Great comedy. So 1980s. Like when you watch it, you're just like, this is a time capsule. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, yes.
Aloha, Mr. Hand.
I still get annoyed though at one part of that movie when Stabone tells the little dipshit there from the movie theater, you want to get a girl get hot, put on, what does he say, Led Zeppelin 2?
Side 2 of Zeppelin 4.
Damone. Yeah. Damone.
Yeah. Damone, not Stabone. Stabone I'm thinking of. It. Yeah, Damone. Put on side 2 of Led Zeppelin 4. And then what's blasting out of the car?
Cashmere.
Wrong album, asshole.
That's
side 2 of Physical Graffiti.
Now, Stabone was Judge Reinhold. Spanking went out, and he got locked in the bathroom, and he got busted.
Well, who didn't play Rewind, seeing Phoebe Cates' tatas flopping out of the red?
Yeah, what was the car song?
Moving in Stereo.
Yeah,
that song is awesome. Oh, my God, that song's just for that scene, too. Jennifer Jason Leigh had a pretty good set, too, actually.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with hers.
But she's getting it in the dugout at the baseball field?
Yeah, yep. the 30-year-old guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the chicks dressed as Pat Benatar, and you know Forrest Whitaker's in it also as the football star. Also, we had First Blood.
That's Dr. G movie right there.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. That's all you, man. First Blood.
A movie I didn't see till actually a few years ago. From Gandhi.
Oh God!
It's a good movie.
I got punished for. In my house, that was punishment. I told my mom to fuck off, and my punishment was to watch Gandhi and not get up. I almost pissed my pants.
Oh, Jesus. That's a long movie.
Like 2 hours and 50 minutes. Terrible. No disrespect to Ben Kingsley, Sir Ben Kingsley, who's a tremendous actor, but did I really need to hear 3 hours about some Indian guy who wouldn't eat? I mean, really? Good grief.
Better. Kind of a letdown here. But I know a lot of people still really like this movie, Grease 2. Trying to recapture.
Grease 2 is terrible.
There are people that like it actually out there. I mean, it's terrible. It's not. Look, nothing will be on the level of Grease.
No.
But you know,
this was one that did not need a sequel.
No, it didn't. But you know, Michelle Pfeiffer as Stephanie Zanoni. Woof. You know, Maxwell.
Adrian Smed says Pischetti instead of spaghetti. Had Adrian Smednick. I mean, really? Come on.
Oh, he was still. Wait. He was also in Bachelor Party, though.
That is true. And T.J. Hooker. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about him later in the decade.
A Midsummer Night Sex Comedy. My Favorite Year. Pink Floyd, The Wall. Richard Pryor. We're getting feedback. Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip. Another movie that I've never watched, but Sophie's Choice with Meryl Streep. Swamp Thing also came out here, as well as The Thing.
Tremendous. John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. Tremendous horror movie.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell. Oh, my God. So good. That movie scares the shit out of you. Yeah. And it's ironic that John Carpenter's breakout movie, which was Halloween, what are the kids watching? What are Jamie Lee Curtis's kids watching, or not her kids, but the kids she's babysitting. What are they watching? They're watching the original Thing. So you knew down the line Carpenter was going to try and do a remake, and his remake is so good. It is downright menacing.
Great soundtrack. Is that John Williams?
Yep. No, The Thing is tremendous. Highly recommend.
Dramatic music really, really adds to it.
Yep.
And we had Tron. Came out. We talked about that earlier. Video games, you know, it has its merits. It's not a great movie. You know, we have the Tron Light Cycle coming for Disney World's 50th. Looks like a tremendous ride. The Verdict, the Paul Newman film, and The World According to Garp, which was one of Robin Williams' early dramatic turns, with great performance by John Lithgow in actually that movie.
And Glenn Close.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Close. Yep. And your average movie price, the average ticket of a movie price for a movie ticket was $2.94. So that's going to bring an end to 1982, guys. A tremendous year. Really looking forward to moving on through the 80s with you fine gentlemen. It's just going to keep getting better and wilder and a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of go around the horn and see what everybody's got to promote. We'll start with you, Johnny. What do you got coming up on the various feeds?
On the No-So, Extreme Three-Way Dance. We'll have a new one up about this time. Doing double tables as we enter 95.
And Laugh In Theater on your network, guys. We dropped an Animal House, and it was a second date and another successful one. I hear that I got an invitation for a third one, which is a first in history. So thank you.
Well, you know, you bought me dinner, Johnny. What can I say? All right. Dr. G, what do you got coming up?
Oh, we got the old NWA Saturday special coming up on Saturday. We're going to talk about the show that's going to be airing on, well, actually aired as we're recording this on Tuesday night on the NWA YouTube channel. Superpower, is that what it's called, Scott?
Yeah, it was Superpower. It was like the Superpower. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to – I haven't even watched it yet, so I got to watch it, and I can't wait to review it and talk about the new show that's coming out by the NWA starting next week. So we're going to have some exciting things to talk about and looking forward to it. As always, had a great time on this tonight, going back to 1982, which was a fun year and kind of brought me back to some memories that I some things that I forgot about. So it was really fun.
Yeah. All right. Scott, what you got coming up? What don't you have coming up?
Oh, gosh.
You want to end this show or what? No, I'll be quick. All right. So coming up this weekend, as Dr. G said, NWA Saturday special. So stay tuned for that. My PIC, Mr. Zero, and I'll be back next week for our next episode of the Place to Be podcast. We'll be doing the Survivor Series Showdown 1990. So we're going to have a new guest to join us as well that week. We'll also do next week. We'll have a new episode of Main Event. Myself, Nate, and Steve. We will preview Double or Nothing, which is next weekend for AEW. On the Jenny position, we'll be recording this week a new episode of Journey Through Infinity with myself, Jenny, my PIC, and Mr. Capel. Again, keep enjoying and listening to the James Bond Legacy series here on the Pop feed with myself and Tech. And again, follow me on Twitter at PTB Podfather. And I think that's it.
All right.
For now.
As for me, over on the wrestling feed, the second episode of Evolution will be dropping probably the same day as this show on this Pop feed. And that evolution is of the one, the only Macho Man Randy Savage. And it's getting broken down by Mr. JT Rosero himself. So we had a great time talking about a wrestler that I loved as a kid and had a lot of respect for. And it's really great having a super fan to educate me even more and really break it down. The biggest takeaway from that show is that, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage, there was so much emotion with his feuds, with his matches, that's what made him great. You just felt it emanating from him. So it was a lot of fun to sit down with Justin for a one-on-one chat. Also, check out me on Body Pressure Luck. We're recording the new episode the night after. We'll see if Ryan stays undefeated from the get-go. We have a couple of great challenges for him. Also, don't forget, check out Laughing Theater. Like Johnny said, we had Animal House with him. We had Peter stopping by to watch the Goonies. And the next episode of Laughing Theater proper is Mr. Logan Crosland is making his solo debut on Laughing Theater. We're going to be watching the Jim Carrey classic Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. So I'm looking really forward to that, as well as new episodes of the group watches. A fun episode should be dropping this weekend. It is myself, Sean Kidd, who has been on quite a few of these group watches, and two gentlemen making their podcast debuts from the Place of the Nation family. The Robe himself, Eric Eels, and the one, the only, James Grunberg, a.k.a. Grooney.
Holy
The four of us watched the tremendous comedy from the year 2000. God.
Did you bring the Riddle in?
Ready to Rumble.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's going to be a mess.
It has been. I have not edited this show yet, but it was a tremendous live watch.
Oh, God almighty.
Yes.
Oh, shit. I cannot wait for that.
How does anybody get a word in edgewise now?
Oh, my God. I'm not even on that one.
Gosh. Oh man, that's all they need to do is add you to it. Forget about it.
I fucking love Grinny. He's such a son of a bitch. I love that kid.
Those guys are great. Sean and I were pretty much just there for the ride. And it was actually, it's funny too, is it was Sean's, hadn't watched it yet. He had never seen the movie. So it was his first time watching. And it was quite the reaction for some of the scenes from him. Oh God, you want to talk about what a shit show WCW was? That was, that's a, and a shit show that movie is actually. As well as Pop Goes the Classics, the new episode is, we're going to be watching, or not watching, discussing the classic movie Dumbo. That's myself, Miranda Berthold, and Chad Campbell. And don't forget to check us out. New future episodes. We are going to have a new Great Debate coming soon. It's going to be a pop culture only edition, as well as Great Debate Wrestling. We should have a new episode of that coming within the next month or so. Don't forget to check us out on all the social medias, Facebook. A lot of the shows have pages. Scott's Main Event has a page. Great Debate. This show has a page as well. Laughing Theater has a page. Follow us on Twitter if you can, as well as check out the website. Don't forget to support our associate feeds. That's the Jenny position and the North-South Connection. Tremendous shows on both feeds, a part of our extended family here at Place of the Nation. But I want to thank you fine gentlemen for getting together once again to talk about a great year. That is 1982. So, for Scott Coscolo, J.R. Sino D'Amato, and the Doctor, Dr. G. George Ribolino, I am Andy Efton. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in 1983. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Oh God.